This is a new reel, Neyland Reel Tool. This is a new reel, Neyland Reel Tool, beginning of channel one right and the continuation of the copying the cassette taken in the field on the Audubon visit on Saturday the 11th of October, 69. On Saturday the 11th of October, 69, I'm continuing now to copy the cassette taken in the field on the Audubon visit on Saturday, the 11th of October, 69. Everything was still green, and oh, we did have vegetation. This is the most beautiful season that their visit has come. It's a late, beautiful, green season. Nothing's turned yet. The grass is just as green as it can be. It would be a little green if it had fertilizer all give out now. Now this is a new reel, Neyland Reel Tool, channel one right, and I continue now to copy the cassette taken in the field on the Audubon visit Saturday the 11th of October, 69.
If you see what you're looking at.
Yeah, if you look what you see what you're looking at.
That's an old homeless saying by myself. But I got a lot of truth in it.
Yes, sir. That's a homeless saying.
But learning is a lifetime problem.
I don't think that's a homeless saying, Mr. Neal.
It's a what? A homeless?
Yes.
Well,
that's an expert. It takes an expert to say that.
Well, yes, I guess not too many people understand what you mean when you say it.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
Yeah. Now we are resting a little bit from the consecutive talk. He just picks up the idea of those beautiful swamp buttercups, he called them. I call them black-eyed Susans or brown-eyed Susans that grow out in the water. They're just beginning to bloom now, and this is the beginning of a new subject.
What they call swamp cup in those yellow flowers there.
They're what?
They belong to the same family that your Spanish needles, the white flowered ones. Biden's nasia is what the botanists call that.
And yeah.
The South call it swamp buttercup. It's not related to buttercup. Ranunculus is the buttercup family.
Yeah.
To which anemones belong.
And it belongs to the Spanish needle family.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, let me tell you, those things got roots. They got roots.
Are they perennial? I never knew. I imagine they may be perennial.
Well, they're the same ones there every year.
Well, they could be there by seeding, too, but I don't know enough about that to say whether they're perennials or not, but most of the marshes in the South have...
Well, you take pokeberries. Are they perennial?
Yes, they're perennial.
They come up from the same stalk?
Same root each year.
The old stalk just dies back?
Yeah, the old stalk dies back, and then next year it comes out. You know, the new shoots they old-timers use for spinach, and it's supposed to be poison.
Yeah.
The new shoots of leaves, and they come out in the spring. For everything, isn't it?
What's that?
That's a fuzzy caterpillar, and I couldn't give you the name of it.
Oh, he's just out of place, isn't he?
No, not necessarily, but I'm not enough of an entomologist to know what his food is. Some have a special food on it. Bobby Burns Field Mouse. Maybe you remember his little ditty. It says, I'm truly sorry man's dominion has justified that ill opinion. The mouse scampered away from him. He says, I wouldn't hurt you. He was plowing a field.
Yeah.
And so it is with the birds. They've been shot at and disturbed so much that they are very fearsome of man. You can call them up, but you have to have patience and food. And they'll finally, now that the doves that I feed will come to me, but a stranger, they fly off as if they'd be shot at.
Oh, really?
Yeah. but they have learned that I am not their enemy.
What was the lady saying about doves a while ago when we were standing up there looking at that vine? Well, she had poisoned something.
Oh, no, she was talking about cats.
You were talking about doves and she was talking about cats?
She was talking about cats. Cats raiding a bird.
I see.
Yes, that's a favorite of mine. For many years I've promoted red cedar.
Now that's native, isn't it?
Native, yeah.
Yeah.
Belongs to most of the hardwood hammocks. That's a hardwood hammock in Florida. And
yeah.
Most always find cedar there.
And it is
Florida red cedar makes the best red pencils. They used to save it all to send to the congressmen because those pencils are higher grade than the common pencils. But it's all cut out now, and there is no more. So they have to use Western incense cedar, which is a poorer grade of pencil. Pencil wood, I mean.
Yeah, and they don't use them pencils anyhow.
No.
Wooden pencil?
Yeah.
Show me one.
I'm old-fashioned.
Show me one.
I'm Scotch, you know.
Any bigger than that, you lose it.
I use the pencil, I guess, because I'm used to them.
But as long as your fingers,
and
you
they'll
have
work.
To take out everything else to get onto it.
Yeah, you do.
It was there. That was the important thing.
What is?
I say it was there.
Yeah, that's the important thing. Well, I carry it mainly because I'm so forgetful. You know, when you're rubbing 80, you don't remember the same. And if I don't write a name down, I'll forget.
You know what the difference is, Mr. Nealon? When you get to be 80, it's not whether or not you can remember or not. You just get so you don't give a damn.
I'm afraid that's part of it. Maybe the main part of it.
You remember if you want to. And
yeah. Uh-huh. But no, I've always been poor at that. And I've always been poor at recognizing people. When I was 18, I was away from home working on a ranch. And I went to town to get myself some overalls. And I saw a boy across the street. By golly, there's Henry King. I walked over, Henry, what are you doing this far away from home? He looked down at me and he said, I don't even know you. And he didn't, and I didn't. You know, after that, I didn't care whether I made his acquaintance or not.
Yes, sir.
But it's a bad fault if you can't recognize people.
Yes, well. Dear. Yes, yes. Let me tell you.
He sent him to the white man's camp to count them to see if they had numbers enough to subdue them. And he said, white men all look alike, can't count them. That's my problem.
Chinese all look alike to me.
Yeah, they do to me, too.
Well, now you look
calm, and they bought fruit. We put up beautiful peaches and apricots, grapes, 10-pound boxes, 20 cents.
Uh-huh.
And they'd take them up the mountains and sell them. They were teeming. And one was Shorty. We recognized him because he was very short.
Yeah.
And the other fellow, I forgot now what his name was. There were two of them, Teamsters.
Yeah.
They must be picking up some warblers, perhaps. But you know, it's not.
It's chirping away.
It's not a good day at all for seeing birds. Foggy like this, they're not stirring.
They don't stir on a foggy day.
Not much, no.
Well, they gotta eat.
Yeah, you'll find them up under cover, hidden away.
Yeah. And then you can't see them much.
No.
Well.
I was noticing my cottonwoods one day last winter when there were no leaves on the tree. And here came a little warbler, and he ran up and down the stem, and he picked every scale insect he could see. And you can't see them, they're so tiny, but he can see them.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, some of my forestry graduates, younger boys, you know, they say, oh, you're one of those bird watchers, aren't you? And I said, yes, and you should be too. If it weren't for birds, we wouldn't even have forests. He stared. And I believe it's true.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
rid them of the insects that would finally destroy the trees.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you don't learn more than is in the book, you're not going to learn very much. Now, then you have something, because there's so much more we need to know. But the great trouble with our forestry graduates is, when, as soon as they graduate, they don't need to learn anymore. They've got it all now. And that's the big mistake.
Mr. Dillon, let me tell you. They belong to an organization now, and the organization pays them and gives them an office and
gives
all will be and all
gives
that.
Them a standing.
They've got no incentive.
No,
to get
that's
out
the
in
trouble.
The woods.
That's the trouble. That's the trouble. They don't have to fight anymore. They got it made.
Yes, sir. The organization makes them.
And there you stagnate, and there you stay, and you contribute little after that.
No, you're on the receiving end.
Yeah,
that's
I'm
what
afraid
the organization do you.
You understand. You've been wanting to. That's where the trouble comes in. Learning, I once said, is a lifetime thing. It stops with the grave. And one old church member said that maybe we have our biggest lesson to learn then.
You know, I kind of come to a compromise with the organization, Mr. Neal. You got to belong to one these days to make a living. And if you can get one where they'll let you put in hours and won't worry you,
yeah.
when you go home, you can do something.
Yeah.
Just on
yeah.
you've got it your own time.
Yes.
But you take it. You take now. It's hard for a man to make a, what I used to say, make an honest living. That is work for himself.
Yeah.
It's hard to make
very,
a living.
Very difficult.
Very
now.
Difficult.
For the small man, it's now corporations.
Yeah.
You got it. The man that is almost pushed out of the picture.
Just about. Well, he got to find a little hole in the
yeah.
cubby hole in the corporation.
He has to be more
and then
resourceful.
Yeah. And then what you've always done all the time, he's got to be able to sort of pick that up on the side.
Yeah, sure he does. He better be picking up, too, if he wants to survive.
Yeah, but that's now that's the unusual thing.
Yeah. It's all right yet. It won't be when we pass on.
Yeah, well, I don't believe we'll end that conversation.
Well, the very people that you mentioned then, that have it made, and then they stop learning and they stop worrying about anything.
Yeah.
I once read a little statement, and it says, the man who hasn't, by the time he reaches 45 years of age, worn a crown of thorns, has never done very much. And if you're ahead of your time, if you're projecting into
yeah,
the future,
yeah.
well, you that's the only way any progress is made.
Yeah.
And my hardwood planting scoffed at it. I planned it and took it to the chief forester, the school of forestry, and I said, this is what I'm planning to do as a retirement project. I'd like to have your comments. He looked at it, my outline, no comment.
No comment.
I said, well, the way he spoke, I said, well, does it sound like a sensible thing to do? Never heard of such a thing.
See,
it was something new.
Yeah.
Wasn't in the book. He had no way to prove
yeah, yeah.
it. Condemn it.
Or it threatened him.
Threatened him. Here, and I'll send a copy. When I found out Stoneville had a U.S. Forest Service research project there, I sent him a copy of it, and I said, I need some constructive criticism. What am I reporting that is insignificant, unimportant? And what am I not reporting on that is should be considered and recorded? He didn't say a word about that. But he did say that is an amazing undertaking, very worthwhile. It's going to lead our scientists into new areas of research, and I hope I can come to see it.
Oh, really?
Now, he's a man that was in charge of the research project with Hardwood.
Oh.
But Hardwood, well, my boss out of Washington once said to me while I was still working, Hardwoods, pine's a thing. What are you fooling with hardwoods for? Well, in my book, nobody looks little, nobody looks big. I said, ye gods, man, 500 foresters in Florida talking about pines and one thinking about hardwoods, and you want to stop me? He didn't say another word.
Mr. Neal, what is that about the cottonwoods would take water over the roof? As long as it's running water.
I don't know myself, except I figure it this way. Running water carries a bit of oxygen along with it, and I think that is the reason. I caught on to that one time. I was called upon one time. There was a prairie there. And the man said he wanted to plant pines all over there. I said, well, nature didn't grow any pines here, and I doubt you can. Well, why? Well, I said, the high water table. There, a little stream going through there with pines, flash pine growing fine in it.
Yeah.
And I said, yes, that's flowing water. And they'll stand it 3 feet deep if it doesn't last but a week or two.
Yeah.
And then the flood subsides and then it's dry again.
Yeah.
But if it stands there for 3 months, they'll be dead.
Yeah.
So same thing is true of cottonwood.
They'll last a while.
Yeah. I cleared up another row of willows and planted that last row to cottonwood, and I wrote my man in Mississippi, Stoneville, that's what I did. He says, I'm much interested in what you're doing. We are doing the same thing. I said, I'm satisfied they're not going to survive here, but I want to find the line of demarcation where the tolerance gives up and where they will still make satisfactory growth.
Mm-hmm.
So I planted that last row for that purpose. You know, if you tell a man something, that doesn't mean much.
Oh, no.
But if you show him,
yeah,
then he'll believe.
You see it. Well, actually, you can see it better.
Yeah, that's in extension work. Demonstrations are the big thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, what did you do?
I cleared up a last row. See, my planted area slopes
down to the water.
From dry to medium wet to very wet.
Yes.
And the last row, I decided it was too wet. But then I said, how do I know? I'll plant another row where I know it's too wet. And I'll see if they lag there and won't make any growth, and then I have proof, not just what I believe. Like the man who came out to see whether his new tractor driver understood how to drive a tractor, and he said, well, now this is a carburetor, I believe, and this is so-and-so, I think, and this is so-and-so, I imagine, and the old man says, you think, you believe, you imagine, don't you know?
What'd you say?
They're trying to figure out if the water table gets that high sometimes, and those are roots.
That's right, it does.
Does it?
It gets up into the woods.
That's what it looked to me like.
Yeah.
And I wondered if there's a Spanish moss that was caught there, but that looks like roots.
It looks like...
Well, you know, you've seen the water.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
So that's the answer.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Well, this is a good beef plant.
Huh? Oh, it is.
And, one old beekeeper once told me about that in Clay County. He said, my bees are doing all right. He says, heart's disease is now in bloom. But he just didn't understand. That's smart weed. Someone told him it was smart weed, but he interpreted it as being heart disease.
That old smart weed.
That's smart weed. But he said that makes a good honey flow.
I didn't realize that.
I didn't know it either. But he was a beekeeper. away from the city. I don't belong in town.
From this spot right here, town's way off, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's quiet. I like that. No motorcycles roaring by. But Bird Lies is not on the move today.
Right quiet.
Very quiet.
You know, that's one thing about organizing bird walk. If you do it ahead of time, you may pick out a bad day when they're not. It's not a good day for it.
You can't depend on weather in Florida and many other places also. But you take the West California, for instance, you can tell much more about the weather.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you how it is in winter. At sundown, there'd be a bank of clouds about as high as the top of those trees in the west. We notice that.
Mm-hmm.
Next day, it'll be up, maybe as high as the top of that tree. The third day, it'll be overhead. The next morning, it'll be raining.
Oh, really?
It'll rain for a week, every day, all night, all day. Then the sun will go down in a bright patch of blue sky, a week of fair weather.
Yeah.
And that's normal.
That's normal. And that's predictable.
That's predictable.
That's
fine. Here, the weather is not predictable. The whole east is not predictable.
Yeah. You know, because the water has got a
high water table, then its roots are too shallow, have to be,
yeah.
And then they blow over.
Yeah, they just almost turn over.
Yeah.
Sometimes they just stand there like that, and you see, and rock
kills them, yeah. Well, they can't stand that much water periodically, but you could have made some pulpwood, veneer wood out of him. Intermittently, the dry periods remain long enough, the water table doesn't get this high, you can still grow a tree to merchantable size.
Yeah.
Natural history on the way.
What tree is that, Mr. Sam? You know that, Barbara?
No.
Look up.
I see.
Look up. Supposed to be a possum in it.
A what?
Supposed to be a possum up there.
Yeah, that's right.
All right,
remember
now I know.
Remember that colored man who had to put up a possum tree?
No, what was that?
Oh, it was all about the preacher who went hunting. It was on a Sunday morning and he was preaching. He wasn't against his religion, but he took his gun along. First thing you know, he ran across a great big bear. And he got so excited he put up a simmon tree. Little old ditty we sang in scooting day.
Yeah.
That's a native wild persimmon.
Yeah. That's where we used to get the persimmons, the possums.
Yeah, they like them. Yeah. And raccoons, too.
Raccoons, too?
And birds, yeah.
Raccoons?
Yeah, after frost, there's a variation among persimmon trees. Some trees have much less acrid juice in the fruit. Puckers your mouth.
Yeah.
And the possums and the raccoons know those trees, and they'll make a trail to that one and pass up all the rest.
Well, what do you know? What do you know?
They know a few things, too.
Yeah?
Me and raccoons.
Yeah.
Have to know a few things. Call them catbriars.
Catbriars?
Because they're so terrible on your skin, they'll rip you.
Catbriars.
I usually keep the back of my hand and going through the woods. I don't pay attention to where I'm going. I'm looking up and then I ram into one.
You don't know just offhand what they call greenbrier up in East Tennessee in those mountains in there.
No, I've heard of it, but I don't know the mountains well enough.
Well, I don't remember. But it's something like this. It'll really cut your piece hair.
Yeah. It must be one of these finest, what I called a while ago.
What do you call it? Cat briar,
but it's a smilax. That's the word I was trying to get. It's one of the smilax. And we have some without thorn.
Yeah, that's that poison one.
Calocarpa americanum. Now I know you remember that. Beauty berry.
Huh?
Beauty berry.
That's not what I call it.
What do you call it?
I can't remember.
They call it French mulberry sometimes.
Yeah.
They
that's
have
a good
different
name
names.
For it.
Everybody
yeah.
has his pet name. Birds subsist on those in winter yeah. when the frost falls.
Oh, do they?
Yeah,
oh, do they?
They eat them. They clean them up. After a while, when it gets too cold and the insects are all hibernating, that's
yeah.
what they live on. That and hackberry and
yeah.
Several other berries.
Well, they really,
berries,
they really scatter it. It's everywhere.
Yeah, it's native here.
Yeah, this woods is full of it.
I don't see it. Why, there it is.
Yeah. And I don't mow in here. I ought to mow out all these little old things like that.
Yeah, wax myrtle. We used to make candles out of those berries in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
Those myrtle berries, they have a waxy coating. If you get the fragrance of it, you'll always remember it.
Yeah.
If you're in doubt.
Yeah.
This wax myrtle?
Yeah.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Useful as well as ornamental.
Yeah.
And the birds eat the food, they eat the berries too. That carries them in the winter. What killed that tree there in among those oaks? These boles.
Yes,
the others strangled it.
Just strangled.
Probably did.
Yeah.
Merciless.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Oh, well, nature's seldom mild. And
yeah.
rough.
Yeah.
And that's
yes,
the grapevine
sir.
Climbing up there, is it? Looks like a grapevine.
Uh-huh. And that's an oak, too.
Yep.
Just strangled.
Mm-hmm.
The other two is got it.
Two, he was probably older, and like us folks, the young folks finally push us out. Maybe the young lady would like to know the name of it. Have you got a name for it? This is what they call water oak. And you can always remember it because it has canoe paddle shaped leaves. See, and the canoe floats on water and water oak. Well, they have an association now, as you see. An oak is a leaf broad and going down to a taper. Well, that's water oak.
Well, that's a good way to do it. That's a shot. Snag your bridges.
Uh oh. He can do that better than I can. Go under on me. Plant?
No. Beautiful, isn't it?
Gerardia.
Gerardia?
Yes. Now, you have to remember there's a cultivated flower they call Gaillardia.
Oh, yes,
this
yes.
Gerardia.
Gerardia.
The fall flower usually grows in moist areas. Very pretty little flower.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Beautiful. Oh, I like morning glory.
Yeah. And here we have a pine. And what kind? Seven native pines in Florida. Sometimes the needle gives you the answer. Three in a bundle, aren't they? And from 5 to 7 inch long needles and 3 in a bundle is loblolly, which is not one of our more important pines.
The
pine
state. The state grows it in the nursery.
Yes. One reason I don't recommend it is if you have flash pine, it's much more susceptible to Cronosian rust. It gets on the stem, and if a pine ever gets a lesion on the stem, that tree is doomed.
That's gone.
Yeah.
Is that right?
It never heals. It'll finally surround and kill the tree.
Yeah.
And this is 3 times more susceptible than the other pine.
Oh.
It's a disease that lives in two stages. In winter, in summer, the fungus spores are formed on oaks, and then they get on the pine in winter and spring. And if you have oaks, you're going to have Schoenoelotium fungus. And the disease on the oak leaf is a tiny speck, almost microscopic, red speck. But it does the damage. There you go. Two holes. One of the trees.
Shoemake.
Oh. What did you call it?
Shoemake.
How do you spell that?
S-U-M-A-C.
Why do you call it shoemake? Everybody does. There's no H in it.
Yeah, no H.
But the botanist called it shoemake.
It just don't sound right to say
shoemake.
Doesn't
sound right to me either. Oh, well, I don't know. Shoemake.
Shoemake. Shoemake.
I still want to call it shoemake.
Yeah.
And there's some ironweed.
Yeah.
Usually, this is late for it. It was probably grazed off or something when it was young and putting out late. It
oh.
Comes in about 4th of July, and by this time it's usually all gone.
All gone. Yeah, well, this has been mold in here.
Oh, well, that may be.
Ain't perishable hay in winter.
It would be nutritious. It would support your cattle if it were cured hay.
Yeah.
This might have been cut about 2 weeks ago or three. Better.
About two
now months. It has lost some of its nutrients.
Yeah. You mean right now in this time of day?
Any time of day when it's dull like this. If it was sunny and a breeze, you wouldn't have any. They'd be all hidden away. But on muggy, cloudy days, not as bad as they are at night, but nearly so. Oh, yes, I'm thinking about a tall story. My forest goes down to wet ground. And the other day, I got one in my throat. So I thought, I'd make a story out of that. I said, there were not so many mosquitoes today. I only got three down the wrong throat.
All right. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. They were so sticky, they just drove me out. I put on a raincoat and sprayed around my head, and put on a hat. In 10 minutes, they're all back again right at you. Bumps all over my face, hands. Put on gloves to keep them off my hands. In that
right.
Woods, they just seem to breed in that low spot there. Something awful.
Yeah. You couldn't... pepper it with something, spray it with a little something?
Oh, well, maybe it could, but you know that would run into my pocketbook.
Yeah, you mean Uncle, the state or the county wouldn't do it for you?
You know, the university gave me that piece of land to do what I wanted with it in the way of planting hardwood, but not one penny would they pay me for the work.
Uh-huh.
And the labor and the expense. And, you know, after 13 years, they lived up to their agreement to the letter.
Yeah, you still got the land.
$10,000 wouldn't pay for the labor alone. It paid for day wage.
Yeah.
Because that was so much work. See, I had to scout the woods first and drive hundreds of miles to collect the seeds from which I grew the nursery stock to plant.
Yeah.
Sometimes I had to make a 250-mile trip out to West Florida to get certain species that I needed. Like
it's not all the same kind.
Poplar. Oh, my, no. It's a mixed randomized, the way nature grows. From here to Canada, you rarely see hardwood trees in pure stands, almost never. So don't you suppose my idea was that Mother Nature in 10,000 or a million years has learned how to go, mixing the species?
Now this is the other side of the cassette, and it changes the subject. This is the other side of the cassette, around 405, and it changes the subject. I asked him again for the story of how his father lost his land out west.
Bobby, what did he say he lost his property through a scandal, through a...
Back in the late 80s, my folks bought there and bought raw land and cleared it up.
Yeah.
And planted it to apricots, peaches, grapes, and
Oklahoma.
Figs. Had 3 acres of figs, a small fig orchard, but we produced tons of dried figs every year out of that.
Yeah.
And so after everything, people used to come up that dusty road. So, you know, from May till November, there's not a cloud in the sky. It doesn't rain, and so you have to irrigate.
People would say, you're living in a paradise here.
Well, everything was dry, but this was green and beautiful and full of wonderful fruit. And we had about 20-some acres in vineyards, table grapes, raisin grapes, and wine grapes. We made about 1,000 to 2,000 gallons of pure grape wine every year.
Mm-hmm.
And all that lost when they took our irrigation. They sold the land with a water right, guaranteeing that they would furnish water, which came 40 miles away in ditches from the mountains where they had a dam. So when the gold dredgers moved in 1905, 6, and 7, and dug up the beautiful valleys and turned them into 11-foot cobblestone piles, they could pay 4 times more for water than a farmer could afford to pay. So they just turned our water there, and we withered up. Lost everything.
Mm-hmm.
Went to court. Took them nearly three years to determine was a breach of contract. They're compelled to furnish us water, but we were nearly ruined then. Without irrigation water, you can't grow anything. So then the corporation appeals to a higher court, you know, and Dad says this has already cost us money. And they may find a technicality in it somewhere. We'd be ruined by that time anyway. It took them 5 years probably to decide whether we had a case or didn't. That's all wrong. When an emergency is, the court should decide immediately. But that's not the wonderful country we live in. So Dad said, well, I hear it rains enough in Florida. We don't need to irrigate. So we cleared up new ground. I came to university, as I told him, the four of us brothers, digging stumps and palmetto roots, clearing up new ground. I told him that we didn't know anything about agriculture here. This is so different. None of the plants we used to grow would survive here, would do any good. I better go to the university and take that 2-year special course and learn how to go. Well, I brought a lot of questions with me, but it didn't help much. The first professor I asked, he had just come from New Mexico. He didn't know anything. The next one came from Pennsylvania, and he didn't know. Came from New York, and he didn't know. But I got some basic training there, and then I went back to the farm, but oh no. I had to hold weeds at 12.5 cents an hour to make my books and board and lodging and all, and so I couldn't afford that first year. I couldn't afford a 5-cent ice cream cone.
Oh.
And so they found out that my grades were all straight A, you know, I'm Scotch, I was paying my way and I want to get my money's worth.
Yeah.
So they called me back to be farm foreman on the experimentation farm. It was no more than a 2-year course in agriculture in those days.
Yeah.
Because, they figured that here was a fellow that could do something and maybe understood how. One professor once said, he saw me hoeing weeds there. He said, I wish I could get that acre plowed. Well, I said, how about me plowing it for you? I was 19 then. He said, you know how to plow? I said, my goodness, that's all I do know. Well, I went down to the farm where I was foreman later, and I saw a mule in the lot, and then I found a collar that would fit him, and then I found some harness that would fit him. Nobody there, couldn't ask. But, you know, if you assume authority, sometimes you have it. I found a plow, and I turned that acre over just as smooth. Dad told us how to plow. It's things like that they remembered, you know. So they passed up the four-year man that would have been glad for the job.
Oh,
because
they
were mostly rich man's sons. They couldn't put the collar on the mule the right way. They put it on backwards or upside down. They just weren't the type, you know. They didn't have the background for that. So I worked at that for 3 years and a half till World War I broke out. Then I never came back to claim a job, but they've been stuck with me ever since in some department anyhow.
Oh, you was in the Army?
I was in the Navy during World War I.
Yeah.
And we out there, my brother was a fiend on battleships and the Navy, and he bought Willis J. Abbott's History of the United States Navy, and we were short of books in them Nar Hills. So I read every bit of that, from John Paul Jones on up, and I thought there was just nothing like a blue jacket. So came the war, I enlisted in the Navy, and I sailed the seven seas.
For 3 years?
No, it was only about two before the war was over. About 2 years I was in the war. I knew my squads east and west because I had military training here, but I had no rating in the Navy, and I didn't want to get in to be one of these 6 weeks wonders and study out of a book and get to be a commissioned officer or get to be an ensign. I said, I know how to scrub decks, and I know how to handle a Navy 6-inch gun, point-blank range of 6 miles. Projectile weighs 109 pounds. I was first shellman, you know, and two men toss it to you and you throw it down the bore. You got to slide it down just right. Well, I could do those things, but when it comes to running the Navy as a commissioned officer, I knew you couldn't learn that in the time I would.
Yeah.
So I didn't go out for training. But anyway, they made me company commander because I could march them up and down. I knew my squads east and west. And, and so I had a nice time there because I could just assign the 96 men I had under my command to peel the onions and the potatoes and clean up the barracks and clean up the grounds, and I didn't have to do a darn thing.
Yeah.
But then they got spinal meningitis in camp there.
Uh-oh.
And,
uh-oh.
And everybody was quarantined. Finally, one morning, they called for 50 volunteers for rough sea duty. How do I step? I lost my soft job, but boy, was that something. Third-class cruiser up in the North Atlantic in the icebergs is where we went, convoying troop ships. If you lit a match, you had to put your shoes and your clothes in your hammock under your pillow and then slide down in ankle-deep ice water and put on your clothes and go on watch at 4 a.m. or midnight or whenever it was. And, it was just terrible. And then no hammocks. We slept leaning up against the bulkhead in ice water. Terrible. And the ship's hospital was full of pneumonia, but I didn't even catch cold.
Yeah.
Luckily.
Yeah.
I remember we had just 10 minutes in the morning when the reveille went to get dressed, get your hammock with the regulation 9 turns around, stowed away, and down below, ready for assignment. 10 minutes in pitch dark. Everything is touch system. Sometimes you grab a fellow by the face and he'd say something uncomplimentary and wish he could see you to swat you once. But if he swatted, he might hit the steel bulkhead and that wouldn't be. Anyway, I was always quick at that, and I was up on top side ready to store my hammock in when a wave hit the ship there, and whooey, I went across. I grabbed the chains and held onto my hammock, but before I could get on my feet, she rolled the other way, and in 2 feet of water, I went in that direction, and by the time I got my hammock stowed away, and down below, just in time to hear them pipe, nobody allowed on top side today. I was too soon, but it was a terrible trip. Terrible.
Well, what in the world were you doing up there?
Up on top side?
Up there in that weather.
Well, the hammock netting.
I mean, your ship.
We were convoying troop ships, and they went so far north that the subs couldn't live among the icebergs. See, that was the idea.
Oh.
Sometimes we drive by a great big berg sticking up there, and it's cold, oh my goodness, terrible weather. Icy winds, storms, the sea with mountain range, one after another. You climb up and down.
Yeah.
And here would come a big berg floating by with a seal in a kind of a cubby hole there. And I looked down at him and I said, "Boy, you look happy. I wish I was as happy as you on the blue ice." Well, you just put on all the clothes you want with the wind proofs over it, and 20 minutes is all you can stand it in the eyes of the ship.
Oh, really?
In that weather, because you freeze to death.
With
it's
all
that
your clothes
bad
on.
With all the clothes you can carry. So they relieve you on the eyes of the ship every 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't know anything about weather, do you?
And you left that soft spot back in
Canada. Yeah, they said rough sea duty. Well, I said a sailor can't be a sailor unless he's sailed.
Yeah. Inland sailor.
Yeah.
Inland sailor. That's what my friends were in World War II. They were inland sailors, Mr.
Oh, wow. What do you call that? I never
read. Well, they had headquarters here in Tallahassee and in Nashville and places like that.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they never even got to the sea coast.
No, we sailed the Mediterranean a good deal. Now, that's a decent ocean.
Mm-hmm.
But the North Atlantic is horrible.
Yeah, let me tell you, a lot of these inland sailors during World War II that I knew, they've stayed in the National Guard, or whatever you call it, all this time, and they've kept up their Army insurance, and they've got retirement. Oh, they've got everything.
Yeah, it's all fun.
They just got
soft
everything.
Soft fun.
Yes, sir.
Well, I got into a little trouble one time. I had to take my crew of 96 men on a five-mile march, and it was out in the country, of course, and I had given this winter, of course, and it was cold, fall, and so I gave them double time, and then I thought, well, the sun's coming out, maybe I'll give them a rest period. So I gave them a fall out. So they all lay down side of the road where the sun could shine on them and kicked up their heels. That was all right, till I called them back into formation. A little old jitney came down this road. I saw it coming up there. And, oh, boy. When it got abaft me, broadside of me, I saw a lot of gold braid in the back seat. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, I've always been a practical sort. I said, well, heck, it's too late now. You get them up, you'd be gone. So when I got back to camp, there was an uproar.
Yeah.
Who was that lousy officer there that wouldn't have the men come to attention when the camp commander comes by?
Yeah.
Well, they found out it was me. Nobody doesn't know anything anyhow, so they couldn't say a word.
Couldn't say a word. Mr. Nealon, if you did all that, you must have been a pretty much of a roughneck yourself in those days.
Well, in the lumber camps from 17 and ranches out west, you don't meet, as Kipling says, men that are like plaster saints, exactly. So you see some rough. If you have to be, for instance, out there we never saw a colored man, you know. And we had some hay to get in while I was farm foreman there. I had about 16 hands to work there year round. So I treated him just like gentlemen the way I would anyone that. Friend or associate, didn't matter. Well, you know, those niggas got to thinking they were the boss there. They didn't know how to take that. So one day I was trying to get some hay in a hurry, and I said, it's not well cured, but up in the loft, if I spread it out well, it'll cure all right, and I'll save that hay. You know what that is, saving your hay. You've been into it. Well, this old near Wesley Johnson, he's a good hoe hand, but he would, I showed him how to spread it, and then he'd just move it this much as he, so he wouldn't work so much, you know. It'd be harder to move it out there. So I said, Wesley, you ain't scattering that hay like I told you. He couldn't do it. Grabbed me a pitchfork, and I went right after him, and I quoted the Bible, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And, you going to scatter that hay or am I going to ram this in your tail? Only I'm afraid he didn't say exact Anyway, yes, boss. I had no more trouble with the hands after that. Now, it has to be that way. I don't like it, but it has to be that way. You have to establish authority.
And you did that more than once?
No, I only had to do it once. I had another opportunity. We had an old Negro there that was most dependable, a religious sort, a quiet, decent sort. And I assigned him the job of keeping the feed trough filled. And we had a Jersey bull there that when one of the professors came out to see him, he was a yearling, he didn't have any horns yet. He knocked him down and tried to horn him without horns. He was that mean. Then when he grew up, he was real mean. So he had that poor old Negro going around that low feed trough. I heard him shout, and I just happened to be nearby in the barn. And I heard him shout, and I saw that man be dead in another few minutes because that boy was going to get him. He's determined to get him. He touched him there with old sharp horns. I grabbed me a pitchfork. Fortunately, there's one in the corner. I couldn't tell you now how I got over that fence, but I was over that fence charging that bull, and he whirled around and charged me. So just soon I braced myself, as soon as he got within range, I rammed that pitchfork in the flat of his nose till the bone stopped me. Well, that stopped him. And then he danced round, round, round.
Oh, he did.
And I followed him round, round. So I had him. I hadn't any experience until then that would work. But I didn't think about that.
You just turned round yourself in a little circle with that pitchfork headed towards him.
Stuck in his nose all the time.
Oh.
Yes, sir. I wouldn't pull it out, but finally I saw I had him. Then I jerked it out and stabbed him in the ribs and right back in his nose again. You had to be lightning fast. Well, third time I stuck him in the ribs, he didn't like that. So he turned tail. So I ran him around the lot three times to make sure he'd understand. And he stayed clear of me ever since. So,
now, that's a Jersey bull.
I know those Negroes afterwards. They said, well, maybe he would have rammed that pitchfork from that man. That man, he bad. And it has to be that way.
Oh, you don't need to demonstrate on the human beings. You just pick out a bull.
Well, an emergency arises, and you're still young and reckless and enthusiastic. Maybe you can get by, too. I did. I survived.
Who is that?
The heat insect. I think, let me see, Dr. Golden Orb Weber, I don't think. Let me see if
he's not very pretty.
Is that his nibs? Yeah.
Or is that an insect?
No, I couldn't give you his name. But I know him well. I kind of like to save him because they are insect eaters and we got plenty of mosquitoes. And let's hope he, you know, I admire him. Anyone that's engineer enough to make webs like that is something.
Yeah. I hate to run in one with my face.
Oh, I do too. You know what? Those golden orb weavers, those are the big fellows.
Yeah.
In the Mississippi bottoms. The woods have millions of them.
Oh, really?
You just can't walk through there without hitting.
Look at that. There's
Dr. Wallace is a spider specialist. He took us on a trip one time and identified all the spiders.
Oh, really?
And in the woods in the hammock, I thought it was an old rotten vine going up there. No. He said that is the, he makes a tunnel and lives inside that tunnel.
Wow.
Out of webbing.
I never heard of that. They know a good place to spend the night. You see, they just had a, this is their bedroom, their parlor.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Well, do you think the mosquitoes is bombing?
I don't know about the mosquitoes.
I'd want to get out in the open where a breeze might keep them. And the mosquitoes just simply collect around them. But I guess their skin's pretty thick.
Does a mosquito bother a cow?
I don't know how bad. They'll find a tender place. They'll
a cow?
Poke him around the eyes and nose and snout. I wouldn't be surprised. They'll bother any warm-blooded animal they can get to.
Well, let me tell you.
bed. They like cover. And they probably, it looked to me, I could see the impression of their body there where they hadn't been lying.
Well,
plant that's an ornamental. Cherokee bean.
Cherokee bean.
The beans are red and the flower spikes are red.
Yeah.
The seeds are red.
That looks like a tulip tree.
Yeah, a little bit. No, a tulip tree is different in this way. I have a good many of them in my planting. The tulip poplar looks as though the leaf had been cut off.
Mm-hmm.
Tulip poplar.
Yeah, that's right.
Built him a house in Gainesville, and his father shipped him a carload of tulip poplar wood from Kentucky because they wanted him to have good lumber in his house.
Oh, that really happened?
Who?
That really happened?
Yeah. They have found out something about mosquitoes, and they open suits them better to attack. I don't know.
Yeah.
Cemetery there moved out a little too far and
yeah.
High water got him.
Yeah.
But that'll yeah. Keep happening. It'll move in and out, around the edge. Yeah. Tulip poplar also, but cottonwood.
Oh, I see. Well, now this has been my road. Yeah, and it just mats the ground,
yeah.
Like right there.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah.
Well,
just mats the ground.
Mm-hmm. That would be good food. You know, the fresher the blades, the more nutritious.
Yeah.
The cows, somebody must have told them.
Somebody must have told them.
Cut them just before they're ripe and dry them in the house and put them in an old vase. It's like a beautiful decoration.
And they'll stay there a while?
Oh, they'll last for years.
Plume grass.
Tall plume grass. Mm-hmm. I used to usually have an old urn or something. Vase that has a supply of it. This looks like it's about ready to be plucked. If you wait too long, it'll shatter.
Mm-hmm.
Just before it's mature.
Crack old red wings.
I guess they're red wings. They look most like.
Do the red wings? Do they thrive mostly at these places where they feed the cattle?
They take advantage of that, and sometimes. You'll even find some western blackbirds mixed up with them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, now, you find them out in the swamp, too, Mr. Leland. These red wings.
Oh, yes. You find them anywhere. But they do like to collect around the feed troughs where the waste grain is plentiful.
Yeah. And they're always there in large numbers, aren't they?
Almost always. From 50 to 200.
Yeah.
But starlings are coming in here heavily now.
Are they?
I don't like them. I saw them appropriate a woodpecker's nest a year or two ago.
You did what?
And they nest in a woodpecker's nest and they drive the woodpecker out.
Oh, really?
And the woodpecker is a friend of the forest and they're not.
Yeah.
Oh, they help some. They do eat insects. They're not as helpful as woodpecker is. Woodpecker is a friend of the forest. Reminds me of the story of this high-powered forester who was addressing a company of people. And he said, "Which one of you has ever done anything to protect the forest?" And the old fellow in the back got up and said, "I've shot woodpeckers, mister."
And the water courses is right out there in the woods.
Well, I've been contending that for 200 to 300 years, Florida has burned the woods religiously.
Yeah.
And I think that has driven our tulip poplars into the swamps for protection. That's the only place you find them.
Oh.
In low ground where they fire couldn't kill them.
Oh.
I noticed that because in West Florida, occasionally I'd go by a piece of pasture next to a swampy place where they grew and they're moving out up the slope.
Oh. Oh.
So they're not confined to wetlands.
Well,
they're way alive. Burn the wire grass and that makes good grazing in the spring.
Yeah. That's right. Early when there wasn't anything else.
That's right. March the pastures would pick up.
I see how thick
alone. We like to make some collards or some turnip greens or something else with it, and a mixture may be good for the cows, too.
Well, let me tell you, you see people put cows in a field where there's nothing but here, not even a weed. And in the wintertime, they'll turn them in on the rye, where there's nothing but rye.
Yeah. Well,
now that's not.
It may not be as good as what you're offering.
No.
I wouldn't think so.
Ain't this sandy? Isn't this what you call sandy?
A little better. Loamy sand.
Yeah.
Sandy loam.
Oh, is it? Well, I haven't plowed it out.
Broom sedge.
Yeah.
Broom sedge. There's not much to it.
There's nothing to it.
No.
But you know, these things go everywhere, and you find clumps of broom sedge all over the place.
If you can keep them from going to seed, you soon control them.
Yeah.
Now's the time to mow them.
Yeah.
But seed.
Yeah.
That's something I don't know.
Partridge peas.
Is that really partridge peas? Looks like them.
Looks like it does.
But it doesn't look like the regular variety.
That doesn't, does it?
It's not the regular variety. It's another kind of partridge peas.
I hadn't noticed that.
No, I hadn't either, but it's thriving in seed now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think as much to it. I think you could mow it before the seed got ripe.
Yeah.
Then.
Use. Then I don't think out.
Cattle might put it to good use.
Okay. But this stuff will, even if I leave this, it'll shade it out, scald it, I call it. But next year it'll come back?
Oh, yes. Nature doesn't hurt itself. That will all rot by next spring, this stuff, and make nutriments for the coming grass.
And that grass will come back there?
Oh, yes. It'll be right back just as thick as it is there. You don't need to worry a bit. It's just the lack of sunlight that kills. It doesn't hurt the soil.
Well, I like to worry about small things.
Well, that isn't enough to worry about.
If I can get a few small things, it's the bigger.
See, you don't have much of it.
Well, you know why.
You pick it up?
Yes.
Well, maybe you do have more of it. But I wouldn't worry about it even then. But I might try to mow it a little sooner before it gets quite so big.
Now, this is the end of Channel 1 Right on this new reel. Lua Neeland, number 2, visited on Saturday, 11th of October, 69. This is an end, continued on the other side. Now, this is part of the visit, Mr. Neeland, with the Audubon Group on Saturday, 11th of October, 69. This is a cassette and his talk out in the field.